Good morning, everyone. Happy to see so many people after a rough night, probably. I've never seen as many parties as last night at TechEd. Who wasn't at a party last night? Very few people. Those are the ones who were here to learn. Well, welcome to my session, Raiders of the Elevated Token. My name is Raymond Convalius. I'm from the Netherlands, so excuse me for my accent, I can't help it. And in daily life, I am a consultant and a trainer. I designed a couple of desktop for banks and insurance companies in the Netherlands, and I wrote a couple of books, of which Windows 7 for XP Professionals is in the bookstore. Today's agenda will mostly be about user account control. I will dig into user account control, how it works, and how you can use it in your favor. And I will do a little bit with session zero isolation and service IDs. First of all, user account control probably was one of those very unpopular features of Windows Vista. And what it exactly is, well, there's been some discussion around this. Mark Rozinovich says it's not a security boundary, meaning it will help you with your security, but it does not keep malware from taking care of your systems. So the best explanation I found at TechNet says it's a solution to run most applications with standard user rights and encourage software developers to create software that runs as a standard user. And I think that's what it does. And then it should enable the user to have an easy way to switch from the standard user to the user with all his privileges as an administrator. So what Microsoft did with Windows Vista is they introduced four user types. First of all, there is the administrator. That's the administrator that's disabled by default in Windows 7 and Windows Vista. And that's there on Windows Server 2008 and Server 2008 R2. And it does not use user account control. You log on and you're the administrator with all your rights and privileges that you can have, and you can own the system. Then on Windows 7, when you install your system, you enter your name and you get a user account. And this user account can log on and can get elevated. And when it's elevated, it's an administrator on the system that has administrator rights. But before that happens, you're kind of the protected administrator. That's a user like that logs on and gets restricted privileges. And with the restricted privileges, you are a admin in admin approval mode, meaning that you own those administrative rights and privileges, but you can't use them until you approve. And then there's still the standard user, and the standard user is the one that we prefer to use in enterprise environments. So what is it that really happens when you log on as a administrator in admin approval mode? Well, as with every logon, you're getting a user token. And the user token consists of the user security ID, meaning you, and that can be the security ID in the domain or in the local system. It consists of your group security IDs, meaning it will have all the groups in there that you are a member of. It will have a mandatory label that I will talk about later. And there are rights and privileges that you can have to do certain things on your system. But when you log on, Windows will check if you are a member of one of these groups. It contains most administrative groups that are there by default in Windows. So if you are a member of the administrators or the domain administrators or the schema admins, Windows will look for these groups. And if it finds one of these groups, they are flagged. They are flagged with a deny flag. And the deny flag means that if you, with your user token, try to access a resource, a file, or a registry entry, and that registry entry requires that you are a member of one of these groups, you will be denied access. Something like that happens with your rights and privileges. Your rights and privileges define what you can do with your system, and Windows will strip all the rights and privileges except for the ones that are supposed to be there for standard users. So you should be able to shut down your system. And you should be able to change the time zone. But you should not be able to make backups, for instance. Well, there is an easy way to see this on a Windows system. Here's my system, and I am logged on as a user that I called full admin. And my full admin is a member of almost every administrative group that I could find. And as a full admin, I am an admin in admin approval mode. Where is my mouse? And I can start a command prompt here. And this is a command prompt running as a standard user or an administrator with restricted privileges. Now, using Process Explorer, let's start Process Explorer as an administrator. I can see what my user token looks like. Properties, and there's a security tab here. And in the security tab, let me zoom, move a little bit down. I can see my group memberships. Let's watch here. So you see here that I am a member of domain admins, but domain admins is flagged for deny. Let's try this again. Domain admins is flagged for deny. So is schema admins, so is enterprise admins, and every other built-in group. But as I said, it's the most built-in groups. Above the domain admins group, you see that I am also a member of DHCP admins. And DHCP admins is not flagged for deny. It will stay there. The same will be it will be for DNS admins. It will just be there in your user token. And then when I start a command prompt with administrative privileges, I will get a new process, and the new process, if I look at its security properties, you notice that I am a member of all these administrative groups, and they are here flagged as mandatory groups. So here I am just a member of these groups, and I can use all the privileges that are belonging to these groups. The same mechanism you see for the privileges. Here are the privileges. As an administrator, I have the SE backup privilege, for instance. This enables me to create a backup, and I can bypass ACLs on files and folders with this option. If I look at the other process, the restricted process, you'll notice that I only have a limited list of privileges here. Now, is there anyone here in the room that was at my session of last year? No one, okay. Well, last year, only one. Last year, I demoed the same mechanism, but I used a built-in program from Windows. That's called Who Am I? And Who Am I can enumerate your user token. And last year, I noticed some strange things using Who Am I? Let me show you. This is my restricted process. And when I use Who Am I, it will enumerate my user token. It will show me my user sid. And it will show me all the groups that I am a member of. But now last year, I noticed something strange. Watch this. I am a member of domain admins. And it's a mandatory group enabled by default. This is not what the documentation says. So I started examining this, and I did a few tests, and I ran into more strange results from Who Am I, and I started mailing with Mark Rozinovic. And first answer I got from Mark Rozinovic was, can you show me a screenshot of Process Explorer? Well, I should have seen that one coming, but I didn't. The fact is that this bug has been there from Windows Vista. And for some reason, I'm the first to find out that it's there. It's still there in the Windows 8 release preview, And I hope it won't be there when it releases, but no guarantee. So if you want to know what your user token looks like, make sure you use Process Explorer and don't use WhoAmI. Okay, when you move from the restricted token to the elevated token, you get a dialog box that is called the consent UI. This is the UI that we didn't like from Vista because it appeared too many times. But what it does, it warns you for a user state change. It warns you that you are moving from the restricted token to the elevated token. And it doesn't do only that. Before this dialog box shows up, Windows moves from the desktop to the secure desktop. This is a modus like when you press Ctrl+L+Delete, and it creates a screenshot of your current desktop and then shows the UI. Everything behind it will keep running. And while it's in the secure mode, the only input that can come into this UI can come from your keyboard and mouse. So it will keep scripts from pressing yes for you on the consent UI. And as a lot of people didn't like the consent UI, they were looking for ways to turn it off. So in Windows 7, this is kind of easy. You have this slider, and the slider has a default that is not as bad as it was in Windows 7, in Windows Vista. Because in Windows Vista, this prompt showed up each and every time you tried to elevate. So what they did in Windows 7, they assumed that you kind of know what you were doing when you wanted to elevate to run a management program that's built in Windows. So if you start computer management, it will not show the consent UI. And that's the default now. You can use the option always notify, and that will turn your system into the same modus as Windows Vista was running. Or you can ask to not dim the display. And not dimming the display means that you turn off the secure desktop. So from that moment on, a script can press yes for you on the consent UI, if you want to. And never notify, in Windows 7, it will completely turn off user account control, meaning that when you log on, you get all your group memberships and all your privileges as if you were logging on to Windows XP. In Windows 8, this will change. This is not the only way to configure user account control. If you're in the enterprise, you can use group policy. And in group policy, there are a couple of options there. First of all, you can change the behavior for standard users. So what will happen if you're a standard user and you don't have optional membership of all these groups? Will Windows show a deny screen for you, or will it opt you to log on with administrative credentials? The default is to prompt for administrative credentials, but you can turn it off if you don't like that. You can also turn on the admin approval mode for the built-in administrator. That might be something you may consider for your Windows servers if you want to be more secure when you log on as the administrator. And if you're an administrator in admin approval mode, well, there's little more options than I just showed you in the slider, because you can now elevate without prompting. And elevating without prompting sounds like turning off user account control, but it's not the same. If you choose to use Elevate without prompting, you're logging on and you still get the restricted token. And when you are required to elevate, Windows will just not show you the consent UI, but it will create different tokens still. It's not the same as turning off user account control. So if I go back to my system, then the slider is very easy to find in the control panel. I type UAC and I can enter the user account control settings. And this is the default. And it says, don't notify me when I make changes to Windows settings. And this is the one that's causing some discussion, because it says never notify me. And never notify in Windows 7 means turn off user account control. If I open the group policy editor, okay, and I go to Windows settings, security settings, local policy, security options. And I move all the way to the bottom of the screen. Here you see the user account control settings in group policy. And here you can choose to change things like admin approval mode for the built-in administrator, or this one, behavior of the elevation prompts for administrators in admin approval mode. So this will, this allows you to choose to prompt for consent for non-Windows binaries, which is the default. Or you can choose to elevate without prompting, which means do not turn off user account control, but elevate when needed, and don't show me the consent UI. The other options allow you to turn off or turn on the secure desktop and prompt for credentials. Now, this is also one that causes a lot of discussions in companies, because what's more secure? If you elevate, should you just click yes, or should you enter your credentials? Well, it's easier to just click yes. And you might think it's safer to enter your credentials. But if you have to enter your credentials 20 times a day, the chances may be that somebody is able to just look over your shoulder and see what you're typing. And then clicking yes may be safer. Also, if someone is able to run a program that looks like asking for your credentials when you try to elevate, it may ask you to provide your credentials and send it somewhere else. So most of the times, it's maybe safer to just ask for consent and use the consent UI. Well, if you browse through these settings, there is one that I have to show here. This is also an important one. User account control, run all administrators in admin approval mode. If you disable this setting, you will turn off user account control completely. It's the same as the bottom option of the slider. So it's not silently elevating, it's just shutting off user account control all over. Now, there are some options here referring to UI access applications. And UI access applications are a separate group of applications that you may need if you need software to run and behave as your user, as your keyboard and mouse. So if you have users with disabilities and they need special software that can follow their eyes or follow special movements with their hands, this software is required to run as a UI access application. And a UI access application can be recognized by its manifest, that I will talk about a little bit later. And it has to be signed, and it has to be stored in one of the secure locations in Windows. So it must be in the program files folder or in Windows. So when do you need this? Well, you might need it when you want to use remote assistance and you need to elevate in a remote assistance session. Because by default, if you try to use remote assistance and you want to help someone and you try to elevate within the remote assistance session, this is what will happen. The session will pause. And the user will see the UI asking for your administrative credentials. This is the default way that Windows behaves, and it changed in Windows Vista SP1, I think. In Windows Vista SP1, this new, at that time, new group policy option appeared that said, allow UI access applications to prompt for elevation without using the secure desktop, and it should say for non-administrative users. So if you enable this setting, you can do this. As an administrator, you can help your user and start the elevation, and it will prompt without a secure desktop, and you can enter your credentials. But keep in mind, this is not your session being the administrator. This session belongs to the user that you are helping. The user that you are helping can end this session whenever he or she likes. So if this user thinks you are very nice, that you just provided me with the domain admin credentials, well, you might have a problem. And you better start running now. But, so you better think before you enable this option. It's an option, you can use it, but be reminded of the risk that goes with it. Now, user account control is not only about groups and privileges, it's also about integrity levels. And integrity levels, that was newly introduced in Windows Vista at the time, and it's Windows using mandatory access control. And what it means is that every object in Windows and every process in Windows gets a mandatory level that can be low, medium, high, or system. And if a process has a mandatory level that is lower than a certain object, it will not be able to make changes to that object. So if you have a process running with a low mandatory level, you cannot change a file with a medium mandatory level. Now, each file in Windows, by default, gets the mandatory level. And Windows is using mandatory levels for a couple of things. First of all your services are running with the highest mandatory level system. Those are the services, and they have to be able to reach every part of the operating system. Then your administrators get the high mandatory level, and they can enter, they can make changes to files that have the high mandatory level, or registry entries that have the high mandatory level. As a standard user, each and every file that you create, even as an administrator, each and every file that you create gets the medium mandatory level. Now, Internet Explorer, in protected mode, is running with the low mandatory level. And this creates a situation that Internet Explorer, the process that shows you the content on the internet, cannot make changes to just any location on your system. It can only make changes to those locations that have the low mandatory level. So what happens? When you log on, you get a mandatory label with the integrity level medium. So you have a restricted token. And when you elevate, you get a new process, and this new process gets the mandatory level high, integrity level high. And it helps you to keep your system more safe in a couple of ways. And you will especially notice this in Internet Explorer. What Internet Explorer does, it runs in protected mode, especially for the internet and intranet zone. And this process runs with the low mandatory level, so it will only be able to write to location with a low mandatory level. And when it needs to write to another location, but for instance when you're downloading a file, it has to send a message to another process with a medium mandatory level to store that file in your download folder, because the low level process cannot store it in there. And to make sure that your low-level process is not able to send just any Windows message to any process in your system, there is this layer called the User Interface Privilege Isolation layer, kind of a firewall that will restrict Windows messages that are sent from the low-level process to higher-level processes. So this is what happens when you start Internet Explorer. When you start Internet Explorer, you get two processes. One process is the management process. It's the medium integrity level process that runs the UI, the outside of the UI. It's the UI frame, your favorites bar, and it's called the broker object. And that broker object starts a low level process for you that enters the internet. This is for your internet and intranet zones. When you enter a trusted site, you get a new process. And that process is a medium-level process. And I've seen this in many projects that you need the trusted site when you try to open a file on a SharePoint site, for instance, because the lower mandatory level will not allow you to open that file in an efficient way. It cannot start Word for you with the medium mandatory level. Well, this is kind of easy to see in Windows. If I go to my demo system and close this one, keep this one open, close these other ones, and go to Process Explorer. Process Explorer can show you the mandatory level, the integrity level of your processes. So as you see here, I have two command processes running. And if I zoom in, I see one command process running with the medium mandatory level, and one command process is running the high mandatory level. So the medium one is the one with the restricted token, and the high one is the one with the elevated token. Now, if I start Internet Explorer on this system, you notice I get two Internet Explorer processes. And these two Internet Explorer processes run with the medium mandatory level and the low mandatory level. So the medium one is the management process, and the low mandatory level process is the one that's showing the internet content. Now, what this does to your process running with a low mandatory level, well, let's first have a look at the locations where low mandatory level processes can store their data. Let me open this one. There are a few locations that I found where low-level mandatory processes can store their information. And one is here, CD user profile. If you look here in the app data folder, you see there are three folders in there. One is called local, one is called local low, and the other one is called roaming. Now, local low is the low integrity level folder in your profile, and this is where Internet Explorer can store its data, and you can show it using iCackles. It shows that the mandatory label of this folder is low. And if I look at the access information for the local folder, it has no integrity level information in there. And if it has no integrity level information in there, it's the medium mandatory level. And the same goes for your favorites folder. Let me see. The favorites folder also has the low mandatory level so that your Internet Explorer process can store its favorites conveniently. Now, if you run a process with the low mandatory level, you can do that using PSExec, another program from the SIS internal site. CD. And PSExec, I can use it to simulate a low-level process by running, for instance, Notepad. And as you can see here, let's see, I am running Notepad with the low mandatory level. Now, if I create some data and try to store it in my documents folder. You notice that I will not have access to this folder. because this process has the low mandatory level. I have the right user groups in my access token, but I have the wrong mandatory level. It's too low to store my data here. So I can only store my data in a low level folder. So that can be the favorites folder, for instance. Can I? Or let's move to user profile. App data. Local low. I can store my file here. And it will just store it there with no issues, because this is the location where my low-level processes can store the data. Now, there is one more location where integrity levels are used on the file system, and this is a funny one that I came up with later. It's in the root of your C drive. You may have noticed that standard users can only create folders in the root of the C drive, while administrators can create files in the root of the C drive. But if an administrator creates a file in the C drive, no standard user can change that file. And that is because the root folder of your C drive has the high mandatory level. So if I look here, C root, you notice that this has the high mandatory level and only for objects in this folder. So it will not go with new folders that are created, but it will only happen in the root folder. So this has the high mandatory level. So if you create a file or a folder in, if you create a file as an administrator in the root of your C drive, it can never be changed by a user. And you know it's safe there. Okay. Now, creating the situation that applications are supposed to run as a standard user in Windows Vista and in Windows 7 also created a situation that many, many applications would be broken. So Microsoft created a mechanism to make sure that not every application will break immediately running in Windows Vista by virtualizing your write actions into the file system and to the registry. In fact, it's kind of a rootkit in Windows, because what's happening is an application is writing data to a certain location, say C Windows, and Windows is not storing the information in C Windows. No, it's storing the information somewhere in your user profile. While the program thinks that things have worked out. And this place in the user profile is called the virtual store. And when this redirection happens, this is stored in the event log. So you can look it up afterwards if file virtualization took place on your system. There may be circumstances that you don't want to use file virtualization. Well, in this list of user account control settings in the group policy, you can disable file virtualization. And if you disable file virtualization, you also disable registry virtualization, which is kind of the same mechanism that if you try to store data in a registry location in HK local machine software, the application will think that it worked, but in fact you are writing to a location in HK current user, also called the virtual store. And if you don't want this location to be redirected, you can use the reg command to set a flag to not virtualize this location if you need this location to be that way. Registry virtualization is not logged in the event log. File virtualization is. And I can show you in an easy demo how this works. Close a few windows. So this window, here I am running as a standard user, as an administrator, I should say, in admin approval mode. But I have only standard user privileges. So if I try to create a file in the Windows folder, it will fail. And I can show you. Echo. And write it to C Windows. Hello.txt. You see, access is denied. I do not have access to this folder. I cannot write my file here. That's until I enable UAC file virtualization. And I can enable UAC file virtualization in the task manager. Now let's make sure that I have the right command process by closing this one. Move to my processes. And I can use this option to enable UAC file virtualization. Now, let's do that. If I get back to the normal situation, task manager, enable UAC file virtualization, change virtualization. And now if I try to write this information, I will succeed. So I just wrote a file to C Windows. And if I look it up, like this, C Windows hello.star, it's there. It seems to be there. That's until I disable user account control file virtualization. Let's go back here and disable it. And if I now look up the same file, it's not there. What I just did, I got redirected. I was redirected to the virtual store. So this file that I created is not in the Windows folder. No, it's in my user profile. That's user profile, %appdata. Local virtual store. Here you'll notice I have a Windows folder and here is my file. So I was redirected. And the fact that I was redirected has been registered in the event log. So I can look it up here in the event viewer. Go to applications and services logs. Microsoft, Windows, UAC. And here is UAC file virtualization. And if you look here, here it says, I just created hello.txt for you in this separate location. So it's redirected and it's somewhere else. Let's move back to my slide deck. Move back to the slide deck. Okay. So, I was telling that Windows may be in a situation that it can silently elevate, and somehow Windows knows when certain files need to elevate. So where did it get the information? Well, there are a couple of reasons why Windows will know that it needs to elevate. First of all, there is the Windows management tools that are signed by Microsoft as being part of Windows, and those management tools are silently elevated. That's for almost all the management tools except for the command prompt and regedit. It's an easy one. Then, Windows can look at the name of a file. If an executable has a certain string in its name, setup, install, this is not a typo, install with one L, or update, and it finds it in the name, Windows has some intelligence in there that tells you that it should elevate. You can turn this feature off if you want to in group policy, and the topology settings here, detect application installations and prompt for elevation. This works most of the time. But sometimes you may run into an application that has one of these strings in there and will ask you to elevate if you are an administrator in admin approval mode. So changing the name may fix it. That's not the nice way to do it. The nice way to do it is by using a manifest. Manifests are usually created by developers. And in a manifest, you can tell how your application should behave with elevation. So you can tell to act as the invoker, so just not elevate. And if you are elevated, well, then use the same level of elevation that you are already using. Highest available is kind of a tricky one because it will try to elevate if you are an administrator in admin approval mode. But if you are a standard user, it will just run. You can tell the manifest to run the application and require administrator rights, which means that if you are not an administrator on the system, the application will just not run. Now, the manifest can be there in two ways. It can be an external manifest, that's a file that's next to the application, or it can be an internal manifest that's injected in the executable. And if it's injected in the executable, it may be harder to fix issues with it because the executable might be signed. And if you change the internal manifest in a signed executable, you will break the digital signature. There are a couple of tools. They are easy to get. MT is the one that you can use to inject manifest. So if you have a manifest and you want to change the manifest, then you can use MT. And SigCheck, also a program from the sys internals site, can be used to show the manifest information in a file. Well, I once ran into a situation that one of the large network vendors was providing us with a tool to enter their VPN, I think it was. And if you were an administrator, it would require you to elevate. But we didn't want that. And in the end, it appeared that the developer at the vendor that was providing us with this software did not know how to fix this. So we fixed it ourselves. We created a new manifest, injected the manifest, and from then on, we would say, run as invoker, so it would no longer require our program to elevate. Well, I can show you how this works in Windows and how it may affect your programs. Let's move close a few things. Here's my demo folder. Here I have a legacy application and it's called Legacy App, and as you see here, it has a normal icon that says Legacy App. But if I change the Legacy App from Legacy App to Legacy App Setup, it also changes my icon. It has a shield in there. And the shield means this program requires elevation. So from now on, if I try to start this application, it will require elevation. And if I turn this back, so my icon now again is a normal icon without the shield. And if I start the application, it will just start. I once ran into an issue that I had downloaded the bind for Windows. Bind is the biggest DNS on the internet, as supposed by Mark Minasi. And it has a tool in there that's called NS Update that you can use to do dynamic updates. And NS Update has no manifest. And if a file has no manifest, Windows will look at its name. So NS Update would always try to elevate if I was running as an administrator in admin approval mode. So changing that name or injecting a manifest could help to solve that situation. So how does a manifest work? Well, I have an example of a manifest here, and I can open it using Notepad. And The manifest has the requested execution level here. And the requested execution level says require administrator. So what can you do with this manifest? I can tell to start a certain application and require administrator access to run it. And I can do it this way. I can create a folder. Let's go here. Move to my folder. Create a folder. Elevate. Make a folder. Elevate. Then copy my legacy application in there. Then copy my manifest in there. And I have to name the manifest the same as the executable. And with the extension .manifest. So what I just did, here is my new folder. And if you look at the icon, you'll notice that now my legacy app requires elevation. That's because of the content of the manifest. The manifest says require administrator, so if I start the legacy app, it will require my administration rights. I can do the same with MT. I have MT here. By injecting the manifest in my legacy app. So my legacy app now is a normal application that does not require elevation. But if I use MT and inject the manifest, legacyapp.exe. Like this. Let's see if this works. Yes, it did. Now I injected the manifest, and you'll notice that now I have this legacy app that requires elevation, and that's because of the manifest that I just injected. And if I like to check the manifest that I injected, I can use sigcheck. And it will show me the manifest that I just injected. And it says require administrator. Sigcheck also shows you that this file is currently unsigned. If I did this to a file that was signed before, it will also show unsigned because I just broke the digital signature for that application if it was signed before. And by injecting the manifest, I changed the file, so I broke the signature. So these are ways that you can use to tell how an application should behave. But that's not all of it. There is a lot in Windows that you can use to lie to a certain application that all kinds of operations that should fail did not fail, just to make the application work. And you can do that by creating a shim. Creating shims is done by applications that are in the application compatibility toolkit. And Windows, by default, has a large database of shims, where all sorts of applications are known applications with certain issues, and those issues are fixed by just lying to those applications that certain things did happen or are in such a way that the application should work. So if an application checks if it is running on Windows Vista while you're running Windows 7, you can tell the application that it's running on Windows Vista. It's called a version lie. So what you create with shims is also called the layer of lies. You're lying to the application in such a way that the application works. On my demo system, I have the application compatibility toolkit. And the application compatibility toolkit has a really, really buggy application. and it's the demo application. I heard that Chris Jackson had a really, really hard time to get this application out of Microsoft because Microsoft did not want to ship a buggy application. I don't know if it was the first time, but this application is buggy by design. So if I start it, it will check if I am a member of the administrators group. And as I'm not, well, I just have to click OK. And if I try to do some things here, show the options, it will show me some ugly error messages, like this one, an exception has occurred in your application. Continue, and if I try to show the trends, it will show me some really useful information with some message that something went wrong, and I can try to fix this. And the nice thing is that you can try to fix it. Well, there are a couple of ways you can try to fix it. First of all, there is this compatibility tab in your application properties that you can try to lie to the application. You can add a version lie and tell that the application is running on another version of Windows. May help sometimes. You can tell the application to run in a certain display mode, or you can tell the application to run as an administrator, always. But this may introduce some security issues, so this might not be your best option. The better option is to make use of the application compatibility toolkit. And the application compatibility toolkit has the application compatibility administrator. And in the application compatibility administrator, you can see the list of applications that is fixed in Windows 7 by default, by using a shim and doing all sorts of lying things to applications to make them work. So there is a very, very long list here of applications that are fixed by default. And if I take an example here, for instance, Acrobat Reader. You see that Acrobat Reader here has the Windows XP version lie in it to fix that application and make it run. But you can create your own shim. And if you create a shim, you can use one of the available application compatibility fixes in here. So there is a long list of fixes that you can use to make applications work. Some of them will be used quite often, some of them not. And for instance, if you look through this list, you'll see this one, force admin access. This is a nice one. If an application starts and it tries to check if you are a member of the administrators group, this shim will tell the application that you are a member of the administrators group, no matter if you are one. If you look further up in this list, you see other options here, virtualize delete file. If an application tries to delete a file, Windows will tell the application that it succeeded deleting the file, while it did not. Or virtualize HK classes root, and then it will virtualize HK classes root in the registry for you. Or virtual registry, it will virtualize the registry for you. And here is the lie section. Vista RTM version lie, or the Windows 2000 SP1 version lie. Now you can use this to create a database and fix an application. Now, the easiest way to fix our stock viewer application is by using the standard user analyzer, also part of the application compatibility toolkit. And if I browse to my stock viewer application, here it is. And I launch it from the standard user analyzer. I will still be getting those errors now. Let me generate all my errors. All these things go wrong. This also goes wrong. And if I now close the application, the analyzer found all the issues and enumerates them here. So it found that I have a file issue, it's trying to create a directory. and it's trying to do something in HKEY classes root in the registry. It checks my token if I am a member of the built-in administrators group. It tries to create a file mapping in the global namespace. And here it tries to create a process and something goes wrong with it. Now, if you see here, I have the option to mitigate what I just found. And I can export the mitigation as an MSI. It would just create an MSI that I can deploy to all my systems to fix my issue. But if I like to test the outcome of this investigation, I can just apply the mitigation on my system. So here you see that it found a number of fixes to fix this application in a SHIM database. And if I say apply, it just installed my fixes on my system. So if I now start a stop viewer, it takes a little bit longer because it has to load the database. It will start without requiring being a member of the administrators group. Now let's see if everything works. Options, no error message. Trends, shows me the trends. Help, check for updates. Oh, we'll just start an elevated process. So it fixed my issues by creating a SHIM database. And I can show the SHIM database using the application compatibility administrator. It shows me that I have an installed database here. And it created a SHIM for Stock Viewer. With all these fixes, and all these fixes now make my application behave the way I want it, without requiring elevation and all other things that made my application break. Excuse me. Oh, thank you. So, did anyone ever see this error message? 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, that's a lot. Where does it come from? It's a service that tries to enter the desktop. So what happened? Before Windows Vista, we had a session called session zero, and it was the console session. And if a developer wanted to show something on the console for the end user, the easiest way was by sending that window to session zero, and then it was sure that this application which show its output on the desktop. Starting with, I think, terminal services, even. Session zero no longer belongs to the desktop. Session zero is the session where all services live. And you as a user get session one or higher. And that may be a little bit dynamic, so a developer has to find out where you as a user are living to show interactive output to you. And if the developer did not change his application, it will try to show data on session zero, and then you may get this message. And the message, if you are an administrator, allows you to go to the session zero and see what happened, and so that you can contact the developer and have him fix your application. Now, I can simulate this from here. This. By using PSExec, the UAC demo, PSExec, test SD-I0. So what I'm doing now, I'm starting a command prompt in session zero running a system. And as I try to do that, you may notice that I just got a warning in my taskbar. And this warning is the warning that was just showing in my slide deck. It says, well, a program is running and tries to display a message, view the message, and if I try to view the message, I am now in session zero. I'm with all those services. So I can watch what's going on here and then close the application and return to my desktop. Now, if you look in Process Explorer, let's start Process Explorer. Is it running? It's running already. It has the option to show you where processes are running by using the session option. And here you see that my services are running in session zero. I have some processes running in session one. Let's look who they are. Oops. WinLogon is running in session one. And all my programs are running in session two. So this is how session zero may impact older applications that don't know about the existence of a different console session number. Now, if you look at the security of your of the files in Windows, in your file system, you may have noticed that it's a little bit odd. System, which is kind of the most powerful user in your Windows system, only has read and execute access to your system files in Windows. So this is the security, the ACL for cmd.exe. And it says system only has read access. So do the administrators only have read access? And the users, well, naturally they only have read access. And then there is one user, the trusted installer, that has full control. Now, if you take a look in your user administrator on your Windows system, you will not see a user named trusted installer. So what's happening here? Well, this is how Microsoft created a safer version of Windows by reducing different risk layers. We already seen the mandatory access levels, and you may have noticed that services are not always running as system. They can run as local system, network service, so that if you are able to hack the audio service, for instance, you're not immediately the master of your system. You cannot change just any file like it used to be in Windows XP and Windows 2000. So services also have their own security IDs now. So you can tell each service, well, you are a service, and I can tell you that you only have access to the following files with your security ID by putting your security ID in an ACL. And this is what happens. There is a service called the Windows Installer Service, and the Windows Installer Service takes care of your operating system. So if you install a hotfix or you install a service pack, you are not just running a certain service as system and then change those files. No, you can only tell the Windows Installer Service to do it for you, because only the Windows Installer Service by default has the rights to change these Windows files, these system files. That brings me to the end of my presentation. User account control, it's not that hard. If you know how it works, there's no reason to turn it off. I didn't ask you the question, is there anyone here that turns off user account control at home? You'd better not do it. Sometimes you may be forced to it by some application that really, really, really doesn't work. I know. Yes. Yeah. So that's a reason to start using the application compatibility toolkit and analyze your applications and make sure that you fix them. Excuse me? I also recommend using user account control on server platforms. Yes, I do. Especially if you, for instance, use Internet Explorer on a server platform to browse the internet. Please don't, but if you do, Internet Explorer, if you turn off user account control, Internet Explorer runs with all your privileges. So there is no broker mechanism or low-level process if you turn off user account control and start Internet Explorer. So Internet Explorer is then able to harm your system without you knowing it. So analyze your applications and use the tooling. Don't use WhoAmI. I don't know what will happen to WhoAmI. I just found a bug like 2 weeks ago. I blogged about it. I talked to Mark Rosinovich about it. And Mark Rosinovich is talking to the product teams about it. And I don't know what will happen. But for now, stay away from WhoAmI if you try to investigate how your user user token looks like, especially the group section. And sys internals may provide you with some other useful tools to investigate and use user account control in your favor. This brings me to the end of my presentation. Later today, Mark Rosinovich will have his session, Case of the Unexplained. And Chris Jackson will have a session, App Compat for Nerds. He will dig much deeper into the application compatibility toolkit than I did and show you some interesting ways to fix your systems. Well, I can be found on my blog, nextexpert.com, and I hope you enjoyed my session. Thank you very much.